Right on.
For KABU News, I'm Emily Gresham Beamer.
It is 5:59 p.m. and next up is the KABU Youth Collective. And now we're going to play some promos.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the 37th Annual Oregon Ceramic Showcase, Friday, April 26th through Sunday, April 28th at the Oregon Convention Center in Portland. Oregon Potters Association's 37th Annual Ceramic Showcase and Sale features work by over 150 Oregon Potters Association members. It is one of the largest all-ceramic artist shows in the country, and the showcase features sculptures, wall art, jewelry, tiles, functional pottery, and more. Again, that's the Oregon Ceramic Showcase, Friday, April 26th through Sunday, April 28th at the Oregon Convention Center, 777 Northeast Martin Luther King Jr. Boulevard in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KABU Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the 8th Annual Healing and Healthcare Blues Inner City Blues Festival on Saturday, April 27th from 5 to 11 p.m. at North Portland Eagles Lodge in Portland. The 8th Annual Inner City Blues Festival is a benefit for healthcare for all Oregon and features performances by the Norman Sylvester Review, the Richard Arnold Trio, the LaRonda Steele Band, and many more. KABU will be broadcasting the festival on air. Again, that's the 8th Annual Inner City Blues Festival on Saturday, April 27th from 5 to 11 p.m. at the North Portland Eagles Lodge, 7611 North Exeter Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO programming is made possible by KABU member listeners and support from the Rose City Chocolate Festival, May 4th and 5th at the Double Tree Hotel by Hilton in the Lloyd District, featuring handcrafted work from local and national chocolate makers including milk chocolate, dark chocolate, specialty bars, truffles, toffee, and more. Open to the public and family-friendly. Tickets and more information available online at rosecitychocolate.com.
I'm sure you don't remember me.
And now it's been 10 years. I'm still wondering who to be.
And I'd love to mix in circles, clicks, and social coteries. That's me. Hand me my nose ring.
Can we be happy?
Show me the mosh pit.
Can we be happy?
We can be.
This is KBOO Portland, and you are listening to the KABU Youth Collective. I'm Virgil, and this month's theme is The Apocalypse. First up, we have a piece by Youth Collective member Elizabeth. Here we go.
In a place like this, the silence speaks for itself. Silence sits on the landscape like a blanket. Under the right conditions, that blanket is warm and secure. You feel like nothing could ever go wrong as long as you're underneath it, and you never want to leave. But with this silence, the same blanket feels suffocating, almost overwhelming. Everything just feels wrong. There was once noise here. Loud noise. Confusing noise. But, disorienting as that noise was, anything would be better than this. This stifling, smothering silence that put emphasis on every little sound. Every step on the hard, hot concrete echoes through these empty streets, causing anxiety about who might be listening. Who might be watching from the dirtied windows of the tall, geometric towers standing all around. It was easy to feel pathetic here. New sounds, new steps, new voices. Almost alien at this point, but still recognizable. Decisions needed to be made. Investigation or escape. A feeling akin to that of a mouse hearing the soft, plodding steps of a cat coming closer and closer sunk in. Escape was safer, but lonely. So crushingly, unbearably lonely. Caution would be used. Avoiding bringing attention to oneself was important. Of course, it would be easier to hide in one of the crumbling towers and wait for the voices to pass. But no, hiding wasn't an option. Here's hoping that these voices will be nicer than the last ones.
Thank you, Elizabeth. And next up, we have a piece by me, which is slightly less on topic than our last one, but... What's up? I'm Virgil, and today I'm going to stretch the definition of the word apocalypse as far as humanly possible. I don't know if this has happened to any of you, as for some ungodly reason I cannot read minds, but I know that as a little kid, I was dramatic. And by dramatic, I don't mean that I got sad over small... I mean that something that would be nothing but annoying to most people my age was pretty much the end of the world for me. For one, the only time I saw anyone my age at all, friends, acquaintances, etc., was at my quote-unquote school, which I only attended 2 days of the week. Now, I consider myself to be somewhat introverted, so normally this wouldn't have been a big deal for me. I would kill to be at school 2 days a week right now. But at this point in my life, I just had to be into someone romantically. I just had to. I never had a real reason for it, mind you. I think that was just the way I was at the time. And because everyone I liked was always from school, when school was canceled, it was absolutely the worst thing that had ever happened to me, and I was never gonna make it, and it was gonna be forever until I saw insert love interest's name, and I was gonna grow old and die and never get my chance to make a move on them. There was one winter where the weather was particularly bad, and on top of that, the building was having plumbing issues, so class got canceled a lot. I'm not entirely sure how I didn't go out of my mind and abandon society to become a hermit at this point, because my classes were quite literally the only thing I cared about at that time, but it wasn't even that I was going to try and ask anyone out, or that I wanted to talk to them, because I was 10 and I didn't know how to do social interaction. While I was in class, I would sit in the corner, not talk to anyone, and then go home. But even just interacting with the person I liked in passing, like, hey, can you pass me that book, or sorry I'm late, was enough to send me on an adrenaline high for the rest of the day. In addition to that, I also went absolutely bonkers when I saw anyone or anything doing anything even slightly suspicious. In addition to that, I also went absolutely bonkers when I saw anyone or anything doing anything even slightly suspicious. I spent over a month stalking a house that was under construction in my neighborhood because I saw some people standing and talking in front of it for 5 minutes. And right as I started to notice that it looked a little bit weird because it was under construction and it had plywood for walls and boarded up windows because there was no glass in them, it started raining so hard that I had to go back inside. I do admit, the 15-something people standing and talking for a couple of minutes and leaving was a little suspicious, but... there was an apartment complex right across the street, so the location was probably a coincidence. In retrospect, I should have focused on the people instead. I also at one point convinced myself that my dad's roommate was a witch. I was 6 or 7 when this occurred, so I don't remember all that much, but I do remember finding a Google document a couple of years later where I had reported all of my so-called evidence. Again, my memory of this is foggy, but I do remember some of the points on my list involving her playing the violin and owning multiple lace doilies and possibly wearing long skirts. Yeah, I don't know how I even came to that conclusion, as nothing about doilies and violin music screams witch, but I guess it just be like that sometimes. I probably shouldn't have been one to comment on witchcraft anyways, seeing as I also thought I could do magic and would write spells and potions. By spells and potions, I mean some sort of made-up language or gibberish and food coloring mixed with water. And leaves I found in my backyard. Let's just hope they were mint. In short, I was a strange child. There wasn't really any point to this piece besides my own amusement, so I sincerely hope that at least some of you enjoyed it. I'm Virgil, and you're listening to the Cable Youth Collective. Have a good night. That was me. Next up, we have a piece by the International School at Beaverton. They came for a field trip and recorded this, so enjoy.
Hello, we are 8th grade students from the International School of Beaverton, and we chose to come to KBU Radio for our annual Community Service Day. We are here to observe and learn about our community and to understand the importance of animal rights. We interviewed Noah, host of Voices for the Animals. Hello, my name is Grace. We are here with Noah from Voices from the Animals. And Noah, please introduce yourself.
Hey, Grace. It's great to be here. I'm really grateful that you're having me on your show.
That's great. So my first question for you is, when did you start hosting this show?
I actually have not started yet. Two friends of mine, mm-hmm. Courtney and Dab, run the show Voices for the Animals. And they've been doing it for about 5 years. And it's a show on KBU where they just interview different people in the animal rights field and expose the public to that information, because there aren't many radio shows like that that deal with animal rights.
Hi, my name is Carmel, and how did you feel during your first show?
I start in June, but I imagine that it will be pretty exciting because I'll probably be interviewing someone about the upcoming Animal Bill of Rights that's been proposed by a group called Direct Action Everywhere.
Hello, my name is Tyler, and who on your show would you specifically like to interview?
Well, for that episode I just mentioned, I'd like it to be someone from DXE, Direct Action Everywhere, which would probably be Wayne Chung or Paul Picklesheimer, the two of the founders of DXE. In another episode following up, I'd like to talk more about Portland specifically, because something exciting is happening in Portland right now, which is an effort to ban the sale of fur. And Portland would be the first city outside California to do that.
Okay.
Hey, I'm Mario. When did you really start to recognize your love and appreciation for animals?
Well, I think that we all are born with an innate love for animals. If we look at little kids around animals or even stuffed animals, we tend to see a lot of love and compassion and they just want to cuddle, right? And
definitely.
The opposite of that, the willful conscious action to use animals or exploit animals is taught to us by tradition and culture and society. And I think that if we would present, you know, a small child with an apple versus, you know, a rabbit, they'd play with the rabbit and eat the apple. And if they didn't, we'd be really disturbed. So if they did the opposite, that is. And I always had a love for animals, but I believed that it was normal and natural and necessary to eat them and to use them for other reasons. And it wasn't until I was an adult that I learned we don't actually need to eat any animal products to live long, healthy, happy lives. And that's when I realized that what we were doing to them is wrong.
I'm Andy. I wanted to ask you, what's your view on Oregon trying to ban the sale of furs?
Well, it wouldn't be Oregon yet. This would be purely in the Portland city area. And it's actually easier to do something like that in a city than on a statewide level, because it doesn't require an actual vote. It would just be presented to the city councilors.
Okay.
And if they pass it with a majority vote, then it would go through. And so what we're doing right now is collecting signatures of support. And that's just to present to them to show them that a significant amount of Portlanders believe in this.
Hi, my name is Lucas. I go to ISB, and I just wanted to ask you one question. Who influenced your love for animals?
That is a good question, and I don't have the best answer for you because I was kind of alone when I started to develop my sense of ethics around the use of animals and my love for animals. I just started researching on the internet because I was curious about what the best and healthiest diet was for humans, and it started out as in a selfish way, to be honest, because I was most interested in how I could feel best and live the longest, healthiest life. And what I found was that a plant-based diet with no animal products actually had a lot of evidence for being that diet. And so I decided to try it out for myself. I felt great and saw no reason to go back. And it's actually after that when I realized that I didn't need any animal products like meat, dairy, or eggs to live happy and healthy that I started paying attention more to how we treat those animals in order to get those products and how unnecessary it is. And that's when I started to not only go to these farms myself to see how they were treated, but look at a lot of the footage available online. And what I saw really, really saddened me, and I decided I had to do something about it. And that's when I became an animal rights activist.
Thank you for your answer.
Hi, I'm Jane Hamira, and I just wanted to ask you why you chose to help animals.
That's a great question, and it's because I saw that there weren't enough people doing it. We exploit animals more than any humans on the earth. In this country alone, we kill 10 billion land animals each year, and that's over 100 billion worldwide. And in the seas and the oceans, that number is uncountable. It's in the trillions. And we measure it by the ton rather than by the individual life. And not only is that incredibly cruel to the animals, but it's destroying our environment. And animal agriculture is actually extremely inefficient and destructive to the environment, and this is the environment that we, the human beings, have to live in for future generations. And not enough people were paying attention to this and working to solve this problem, and so I thought that this is the field in which I could do the most good.
Hi, my name is Brooklyn Cessna, and where do you think the majority of the public stands on animal rights?
I think the majority of the public has not given it much thought yet. And that's what I'm trying to work against, is just to bring this subject into the public awareness and get people thinking about it. Because I think that if people have all the information, most of them will choose not to support animal agriculture, and will choose to purchase products that don't depend on the exploitation of animals. And that's the greatest power that each of us has individually, is with the vote of our dollar and how we spend that dollar.
Thank you.
My name is Etienne Timmons. I also go to ISB. And my question is, why do you think that the animal rights thing is a necessary issue today?
Well, we've seen many social justice and civil justice movements happen in the past couple hundred years, and human rights has advanced leaps and bounds. It was actually 100 years ago this year that women got the right to vote, and that's pretty crazy if you start thinking about that. And now that human rights have advanced to this level, it's time to turn our attention to the rest of the denizens of this planet and see just how egregious our treatment of other creatures on this planet is. And it's not just a selfless act, the focus on animal rights. Like I was talking about earlier, it's really self-preservation as well. Not only are animal products like meat and dairy and eggs associated with all of our most chronic and deadly diseases like heart disease, strokes, cancers, diabetes, and obesity, but also the environmental impact of those industries is enormous, and we're not going to have a sustainable food system and a sustainable planet in which we can live for future generations unless we fix that problem. And that starts by leaving animal products off of our plate and animal products out of our closets as well.
Thank you.
My name's Rachel, and I was wondering, how do your views on animal rights affect your diet?
They have a far-reaching impact on my diet, actually. And to be honest, when I started being a vegan 10 years ago, and a vegan, for anyone who doesn't know, is someone who actively tries to reduce the harm that they have on animals as much as possible, and that involves what you buy and eat, and it also involves what you wear in terms of avoiding animal products like leather and wool. And back when I started, it was more about health, and it was more about being selfish and finding out what the best diet was for me. But after I did that, I realized that we have no need to use animals for any reason, much less for eating. And that meant that I wasn't eating anything from animals, which includes eggs and dairy and meat and fish. And so what I eat is all plants. It's beans, legumes, grains, seeds, leafy greens, fruits, and vegetables.
Thank you.
My name is Amanda, and I was wondering, how do other cultures' views on meat and animal products affect how you talk to them about animal rights?
That's a really good question, because different cultures do get raised with different ideas of how we should treat and use animals. I've been to Mexico, for example, and in Mexico, meat is actually a luxury item rather than something that everybody eats on a regular basis like it is here. Like in this country, animal products are heavily subsidized, so they're cheaper than what they actually would be if it was a fair and even market, whereas in some other countries that's not true. And so talking to people there, it's interesting because they view meat differently. It's not taken for granted, and it's sought after more as a luxury item. And other countries like China, they might eat animals that we would think of as companions or as friends, like dogs. But what we have to realize is that how we view animals is largely a product of our social conditioning and how we were raised and the traditions that we were taught. And so when I ask people in this country, do you think it's gross to eat dogs? Most of them will raise their hands and say yes. But if I ask, do you think it's gross to eat bacon? Most of them will not say yes. And when I tell them that that's simply because they were raised to think of one of those animals as food and one of those animals as friends, I think something clicks in their minds, because there really is no innate difference between pigs and dogs. That means one is for food and one is for friendship. It's simply the roles that we have assigned them, and that says more about us than it says about those animals.
Very interesting. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Daniel, and I was just wondering, how has our current administration dealt with animal rights?
Well, President Trump has demonstrated that he does not have much interest in animal rights and always tends to prefer the interests of business over the interests of animals. The organic livestock and poultry practices rule that was instated in the Obama administration, which would give organic livestock access to the outdoors instead of being kept in sheds their entire life, and organic poultry more room to move around rather than being confined to small cages, that was overturned under Trump's administration. And also recently, he overruled a ban on imports of elephant products from Zambia and Namibia, which means ivory, and it's usually poached and illegal. And so he seems to prioritize business and profit over animal rights.
Thank you.
Okay, my name is Armand, and I was going to ask you, what is your opinion on PETA, or the People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals?
People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals is one of the oldest animal rights organizations, and they've had far-reaching influence, and I would never speak badly against them from my experiences with PETA employees I've met. I don't work with PETA personally. I've done demonstrations with them, but all the PETA employees and workers I've met have been some of the best people I know. They're very passionate about their cause and about promoting animal rights and animal welfare.
Okay, good to know. Thank you.
My name is Diego. So my question is, what animals are influenced by your work?
Well, as an animal rights activist, I don't focus on any particular species. We see in our culture especially that a lot of focus and attention is given to protecting cats and dogs and other companion animals from harm. I just saw that a law was passed in Virginia that strengthened animal rights protection, but only for dogs and cats. And I work on elevating that standard to apply to all of our fellow earthlings, including most the animals that we use in our food system, which predominantly are cows, pigs, chickens, turkeys, and fish and sea life.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm Joel. What animals need the most help from humans?
It's not so much that animals need help from humans. Animals need us to stop hurting them, by and large. And that is what we do in the animal agriculture system that we have today. We kill over 10 billion land animals in the United States each year alone. And the number of sea animals that we kill each year numbers in the trillions. And so it's impossible to measure by any unit of measurement except for the ton. And so if we simply transition to a plant-based agriculture system, and we know that that's possible because study after study in the last 100 years has shown us that a plant-based diet can result in a long, healthy, happy life, then we'll be using much less land in order to grow crops that we then feed to the animals that we eat in a very inefficient system. And by doing so, we can allow more wild, natural areas to flourish, and we will simply stop using and exploiting and breeding animals to be killed in the first place.
Hi, I'm Avery. What has held you back, and what obstacles did you face?
I'd say public apathy is the largest obstacle that any animal rights activist will face, and that's because how we use animals is so taken for granted and entrenched in our culture that people simply tend not to think about it, at least until someone like myself comes up and starts asking questions, or they see footage taken from the animal agriculture system. And that's one of our main focuses in outreach, is just showing people the facts of how we treat animals in the system. Because when people go to the grocery store or a restaurant and purchase animal products, they don't see everything that went into that. They don't see the kind of life lived by that animal. And so when we hire people, like Mercy for Animals does, to get jobs at a factory farm or a slaughterhouse and wear hidden cameras, we collect footage that we can then show to the public and expose exactly what we are supporting when we use our dollars to buy those products.
My name is Kaylee, and my question is, where would be a good place to start to help animals?
Each of us has a lot more power than we give ourselves credit for when it comes to that, because we can vote every single day with our purchases. And this is a capitalist society. Supply follows demand and vice versa. And if the demand for animal products goes down, then we'll stop breeding animals in order to raise them to be killed and slaughtered and fed to people. And we can support plant-based companies that are focused on providing good nutrition and tasty meals without exploiting and using animals. So that's how we can best help in this regard, is with our purchases. And if you want to get more involved than that, then you can look into being an activist like myself. You can simply start by talking to people in your life about this subject, asking questions, getting people to think about it. You can watch documentaries and share those documentaries with others, things like Earthlings, which is available to watch free online, or Cowspiracy, which is on Netflix, and it's about the environmental impact of animal agriculture, or something like Forks Over Knives, or What the Health, which are documentaries about the health impacts of animal agriculture and eating animals.
Hi, I'm Caitlin, and is there anything else you would like to have us know or something you would like to share?
Absolutely, and that is that we don't have a lot of time. Today, over 100 species of plants and animals each day are going extinct, and that's over 1,000 times the rate at which that was happening before the rise of human civilization. Over a third of the land on the Earth is used for the production of animal products for human consumption, and the oceans are dying to... I don't want to mince words here, because the oceans are so overfished that fish populations are dying off. Over 99% of most of the whale species that we have in the oceans, are dead. And if those ecosystems collapse, if our oceans die, then that will not be invisible to us. Right now, it's invisible because we don't see under the ocean. We see what's around us on the land. But if those ecosystems collapse, it will have a great effect on human civilization. And if we don't start reversing our trend of polluting those waters and taking out the natural life forms and disrupting those ecosystems that we're doing right now, then we face a big disaster in the coming future. And it's not going to be generations from now, it's going to be our generation.
Thanks, Noah, for letting us interview you today.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
This is Grace.
This is Carmel.
This is Mario.
This is Tay.
This is Andy.
This is Tyler.
This is Evelyn.
This is Brayden.
This is Brooklyn.
This is Jane.
This is Owen.
This is Lucas.
This is Etienne.
This is Leslie.
This is Daniel.
This is Raina.
This is Ben.
This is Amanda.
This is Rachel.
This is Colleen.
This is Kaylee.
This is Caitlin.
This is Avery.
This is Diego.
This is Joel.
This is Ryan.
This is Barbara.
And this is Mark Wendell for International School of Beaverton.
That was the International School of Beaverton, and next up is a song called Blindness by the band Metric.
To me, find us a trap.
That was Blindness by Metric, and this is Luna with this month's theme of apocalypse, introducing the next installment of my ongoing piece.
Hi, this is Luna with this month's theme of apocalypse. This work is entirely fictional and part of my ongoing series. Thank you.
Hello, hello, one and all tuning into this lovely broadcast. This is your host, Chelsea Marlowe, coming to you live from my cozy little studio outside the city. This show is going to be very informative. I will be teaching you all at home how to make a bomb that can feel remorse. It's going to be lots of fun, lovelies. This ask was brought to us by... It's a cold night. I'm sure you all feel it. Especially those of you who haven't been lucky enough to scavenge up blankets. Even I feel the chill in the air in my cozy little studio outside the quarantine zone. But enough about me. You're listening for the reports, aren't you? Well, from the camera still powered on and unblocked, I can see that 67th is relatively peaceful all the way down. The zombies congregated there have moved to 82nd. Don't go to 82nd, darlings. That's just a rule to live by. The entire Seaside District has calmed down, but then again, half of the cameras are down. On the ones still running, the streets are barren and shops unlooted, but at least three are covered in what looks like a coating of some viscous substance. The color's evenly given out, so there's no way of knowing if it's dirt or blood. I'd say go down and find out. If you don't come back, I'll warn the remaining listeners. Your sacrifice will be appreciated, so help a lady out. Most residential neighborhoods are clear enough, as are the fields beyond the quarantine. Occasionally, a corpse shambles along, but never in packs. And remember what I always say about singular zombies? They are a great way to take out aggression and morbid curiosity. That's why I take walks. In this cold, dreary world, we have to cling to the enjoyment we can find. So let me tell you all some fun current events. I can see from the unbloodied cameras on 5th and Prime that a woman has gotten a hold of a crowbar and set it aflame. Not particularly sustainable, definitely going to attract the undead, but she will really go out blazing. Oh, and here come the zombies. The cameras don't have sound, so just imagine it, dears. The crackling whoosh of the crowbar as it squishes into the zombie, the crack of its skull shattering. I'd give you a play-by-play, but... Oh, here's a treat. Carl! He's pulling himself through the window of a building on the Seaside District, surprisingly strong for his demeanor. Behind him is Maisie, his friend and now survival partner, watching his back and holding a small portable radio. It's nice to know someone's listening. Maisie! Hello, hello! I have a camera hidden in a tree next to the building. Yes, hello! She's looking at me now. Have Carl say hi? I haven't seen him in too long. Oh, don't try to wave, Carl, honey. You're almost 20 feet up. I don't want you to lose your grip. You two, feel free to come take shelter in the station whenever you need. I get awfully lonely here all by myself. Zombies are bad company. I let one in, and he wrecked recording room 3. Moving on. The woman with the burning crowbar is... dead. And not pretty. The crowbar's still burning, though. That's one plus. The zombies have called my numbers, and there are at least 10 more than I remember seeing. They look older, too. Not recently made, for sure. They aren't bleeding, just rotting. Skin shriveled and sunken, the tears in their flesh dry, and far too close to the camera. I don't want that close a look. If you could all be so kind, please take a healthy 3 steps back from... Gable. So that's where you went. I'd hoped it had been quick, that the fall had... Anyways, in the fields beyond the quarantine, the rain has flattened the grass and revealed something, like a wave coming towards us quickly. I'm unsure of what it is, just a dark, sprawling mass. It's... No. It's zombies. They're tumbling over each other, just a sea of the undead. I can't see where they stop. Listeners, I think this is the end. Not with a bang, but with a lot of cannibalism. I mean, that's how I always thought I'd go out. I'm sorry, Carl. He truly deserved so much better. We all do, really. But we're not gods, so we go out as men. Completely helpless to oncoming large objects. Well, here we are.
They will feel terrible about the fact that they exploded, and the remains of the bomb and the rubble itself will run away in shame. It's quite funny to... Huh. That's odd. Could you hear me all that time, lovely listeners? I think there was an interfering broadcast. Wonder what that was. Gable must have screwed up the board somehow. I swear I want him dead sometimes. Speaking of which, there's Gable tapping on the glass. What, I can't run a little overtime? We're interdimensional and tear through the fabric of time into the future, but we still have to follow set schedules and adhere to FCC swearing regulations. It makes no sense. Anyways, hopefully next time we'll get no interruptions and I'll be able to answer your questions. Remember, even when the rest of the world finds you absurd or confusing, you have a place here with me. Now, I'm going to relax and cozy up with a mug of spiced cider. Gable's on next with whatever he plays for you. Good night from me to you, lovely listeners. Stay lively and stay alive. Wait, wait. Gable's holding up a paper that says, possibility of a violent host-controlling disease outbreak and zombies again? Really? After last year's false alarm, I don't believe it for a second. Good night, listeners.
Thank you, lovely listeners. And I'm done. Up next, to the surprise of no one, it's the end of the world as we know it.
It's the end of the world as we know it.
It's the end of the world as we know it, and I feel fine.
Up next, the second episode of the Interhaven Weekly Informer, written by Maeve, featuring the voices of Maeve, Thomas, Virgil, and me. Special thanks to Ryan.
Good evening, friends and enemies, and welcome to the Interhaven Weekly Informer. Today's broadcast is brought to you by Universicorp. The Bureau's own Interhaven Intelligence Agency has launched an investigation on the disruption of last week's broadcast. Unfortunately, they have not yet been able to trace the source of the signal directly, but have determined that the disruption was not a hoax, but in fact a loyalist attempt to hijack our broadcast. Citizens, this is your weekly reminder. Loyalists and their ideologies are highly dangerous. The sect of their rogue organization responsible for last week's incident has been confirmed to be the same one that has been sending scavenging parties into the territory surrounding our great city. The heightened security measures imposed last week are being upheld until further notice. Citizens are encouraged to limit their trips to the city's outskirts and avoid leaving the city at all, if possible. It's Aldergate's year to host the Festival of Unity. Citizens of Interhaven, Verdict Point, Redemption, and Direfall are all encouraged to attend. The Festival of Unity is an important cultural event, an annual celebration of the end of the Great War. In honor of the Festival of Unity, your community representative will be retelling the history of the Great War, as well as the legend of Dirk Evanson.
Hello, Interhaven. I'm Equinox, your community representative. It's time for the story of the Great War. Don't worry, parents. Our retelling is factually accurate and kid-safe. This is your opportunity to get your little ones acquainted with our history before the festival. What we now call the Great War in casual conversation was often called the Silence War in its own time. The Silence War started almost 200 years ago, back when there were mega-regions called countries. These countries each belonged to their own regions and had their own rules and languages and ideas about what was right and wrong. Some countries were huge, with over 1 million people living in them.
Back then, no one
could agree on right and wrong, and because of this, the country's governing bodies were all very suspicious of each other. They started sending spies and launching technological attacks on each other. Because there were no agreed-upon rules about right and wrong, dishonesty was very common. The governing bodies of the countries didn't want their citizens to know what was going on. So as quality of life declined, the governing bodies kept telling everyone, and each other, that everything was just fine. The tension led to full-on warfare that lasted for almost 100 years. The fighting didn't stop until the countries were completely abolished. Each of the cities in the 4 regions we now have today signed the Unity Charter. These signatures of our own region's 5 cities are right on the document. If you want to see for yourself, the distribution boxes on Interhaven Street corners have been restocked with family-friendly copies of the abridged Unity Charter. In the final years of the Silence War, there arose a beacon of hope upon the metaphorical horizon, military general and strategist Dirk Evanson. Evanson's country took up most of the land that now comprises our region. Evanson rose quickly through the ranks of his country's military force and was awarded with the title General by the age of 24. Dirk Evanson may be commonly portrayed leading his country to success on the battlefield, but his real contributions to the end of the Silence War were largely in the strategy department. Evanson was a brave individual who set a good example for his followers in the field, but his real legacy should be the work he did to end the terrible conflict that fractured his world. Evanson's research into human psychology and his application of it in the strategy room were the very seeds of our great city. Why, he was responsible for founding the Bureau's revolutionary archival system. The work that General Evanson put into his life, his war, and our society is forever woven into our great city and its allies. A success could not have been realized without the dedication of ordinary civilians like Dirk, who put in the blood, sweat, and tears.
Thank you, Equinox. All trains between Interhaven and Aldergate will be free to ride during the 72 hours in which the Festival of Unity takes place. Just be home before midnight on the last day of the festival, and no charges will be incurred. And now, a word from our...
This is Broadcast 2, code number 7510582, the Hopeful Loyalists. Once again, we have a fraction of the time that we might have hoped for, so pay careful attention. The Silence War was a great tragedy in its own time, yes, but ask yourself, who was Dirk Evanson, really? Where are the records of his contributions towards the war? Where is the information about where he lived, who his family was? What was he really fighting for? Where is the evidence that he ever existed at all? Was Evanson even a real person, or is he a myth in the truest sense of the word? A carefully constructed lie formed by the lavender-gloved hands of the Bureau. Do you truly believe that a war on the scale so pervertedly grandiose as to wipe out the overwhelming majority of life as our ancestors knew it was started because of a disagreement about right and wrong? Something happened in the before, something huge. We don't know what it was, but we know that there is something missing from our history. Tell me, Interhaven, who built your great city? This is not a society. We are not living in a society. We are living in an apocalypse.
It is with great vexation that the Bureau reminds citizens to take no notice of any further interferences with our program. The Festival of Unity will continue. The peace will continue. Interhaven will continue on as usual. And now, the weather. The ash flurries we saw last week are culminating in a full-blown ash storm over this coming weekend. Follow standard protocol and keep all children under the age of 10 years old indoors until the storm has passed. Keep all windows closed during the storm and refrain from entering any and all government buildings or Community Service Association offices without a Bureau ID or unless you hold a CSA position. The storm is forecasted as lasting for about 2.5 days, but it's too early to know for sure. Everything should be cleared up by Sunday, when we will return to gray skies and fog. And now, a word from our sponsor.
Oh no, ma'am. What's wrong?
I forgot to make preparations for the ash storm.
Well, are your windows and doors shut nice and cozy tight?
Yes, but I don't have anything to protect my face, and there are errands to be done.
Well, I've got just the thing. UniversiCorp's brand new, fully patented, ash mask. Forget your old, ineffective ash masks and open your eyes under the protection of the full ash mask's built-in goggles. The full ash mask employs new, extreme clean technology to filter the air you breathe and protect your precious eyesight. The full ash mask comes in 10 colors, as well as a carefully designed child size, featuring mythical creature designs including elephant and tiger patterns. Don't get stuck at home during the next ash storm. Invest in a full ash mask. Payment plans available at all sale locations. Brought to you by UniversiCorp, the shining star in the darkness of the apocalypse.
Remember, citizens, there are many dangers in the wilds surrounding our great city. Stay safe, stay sane, and don't interact with anyone wearing a crow insignia. This episode of the Interhaven Weekly Informer is brought to you by UniversiCorp.
Next up, we've got a lo-fi song made by Youth Collective member Tristan.
For this month's show, I wanted to capture that broken, demented, post-apocalyptic sound and atmosphere and make it into a short electronic music piece. The following is what I came up with. Thank you. If you want to hear more of my music, you can follow me on SoundCloud at soundcloud.com/TristanBay, spelled TristanBay, without any hyphens or underscores. My Instagram is @WhoIsTristanBay, also without punctuation or underscores. Thanks for listening!
Up next, we've got Thomas with a nonfiction piece on the apocalyptic disaster in Ukraine.
Just 5 miles from the Belarusian border sits the city of Pripyat. With an area of only 3 square miles, Pripyat was once a thriving town. And just like any other town, they had their own hospital, park, gyms, a cinema, and even an amusement park. In 1986, the town had a population of about 50,000 people. These people were all evacuated from their homes on the 27th of April, 1986. They were told they could return in only a matter of days. Pripyat was founded in February of 1970, but the city's status wasn't received until 9 years later. Pripyat was built to house workers and their families who worked at the nearby power plant. The nearby Chernobyl nuclear power station, which was only a couple miles from the town, was commissioned in 1977, after 5 years of construction. Together, the entire power station produced about 10% of Ukraine's electricity. This was also the first nuclear power station to be built on Ukrainian soil. The 4 reactors were commissioned at different times, and more expansions were planned. Reactor 2 was commissioned 1 year after the first, and then 3 years later, Reactor 3 was commissioned. Then finally, in 1983, Chernobyl Reactor Number 4 was commissioned. Almost 4 years after it was commissioned, on Saturday, April 26, 1986, there was an accident at the station. Late at night, workers and researchers at the power station were simulating a station blackout as to test the safety. This required them to turn off every safety system in the station. During this test, reactor design flaws, as well as negligent safety measures, caused a deadly reaction. The water in the reactor turned into steam, which expanded throughout Chernobyl Reactor Number 4, and an explosion launched the roof off of the reactor. Radioactive fallout was projected out of the reactor into the open air. The structure of the building was in jeopardy, as was the health of the whole surrounding region. The total amount of fission products that were released into the atmosphere amounted to about 400 times the amount of radiation released into the atmosphere by the nuclear bombs detonated over Nagasaki and Hiroshima. After the initial explosion, radioactive graphite fires engulfed the reactor, and due to the radioactive materials, firefighters could only fight the fire for seconds at a time before switching with another. This was to combat radiation sickness. The fires took 9 days to subside, but the plumes of the smoke for those 9 long days was enough to spread across the continent. The radiation spread as far as Norway, which is about 700 miles away. But what about Pripyat? The city was evacuated nearly a full 24 hours after the disaster. The 50,000 citizens were told they'd be able to return in just a few days, so they didn't bring many belongings with them. Some of the items they left are still there to this day, as the citizens never returned. An exclusion zone of about 1,000 square miles was distinguished, and to this day, people are not allowed to live in this area. Going through the exclusion zone, you can see the structures humans built in the area, the hospital, the amusement park, the elementary schools, and the theaters. All of these buildings are peppered throughout the area, but no humans are to be found. The wildlife in the zone is thriving now that humanity's gone. The plants are taking back the areas cleared for houses, schools, and factories. But the impact of humanity has still stained the area, and these structures will continue to stand long after humanity is gone. In 2016, 30 years after the disaster, a steel sarcophagus was constructed over the remains of Reactor 4, so that the radiation seeping through the previous tomb would be mitigated even more. This tomb should last for 100 years, and hopefully by then, a disaster of this magnitude will never have the opportunity to happen again.
Thanks for listening to The Underground. The Underground is hosted every 4th Wednesday by the KABU Youth Collective. We meet every Wednesday at KABU at 6 p.m. to plan our show. If you're interested in getting involved, come on down or call our youth advocate, Aaron Yankee, at 503-231-8032, extension 221, or email youth@kboo.org. We also do a music show, Youth Randomonium, which airs the second Friday of every month from 8 to 10 p.m. We're always looking for music by anyone under 21 of any style. And check out our website, kboo.fm/theunderground or kboo.fm/youth. Thanks for listening.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Greenfield Peace Writing Scholarship Awards Ceremony on Friday, April 26th from 6 to 8 p.m. at the Celebration Tabernacle Church in Portland. The Greenfield Peace Writing Scholarship Awards Ceremony features the 2019 high school student winners of the Greenfield Peace Writing Scholarship and keynote speaker Dr. Brian Gibbs, Vice President for the Equity and Inclusion at Oregon Health and Science University. This year's scholarship question was, how can you work against systemic racism to help make our world more healthy? Again, that's the Greenfield Peace Writing Scholarship Awards Ceremony on Friday, April 26th from 6 to 8 p.m. at the Celebration Tabernacle Church, 8131 North Denver Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Thank you so much for supporting KBOO during our recent spring membership drive.
Thank you.
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 We're really appreciative for all that you do to support your community radio station, KBOO Portland. Thanks.
KBOO is looked up to very much by people all over the country.
Please join us on Saturday, April 27th from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. for the KBOO Edit-A-Thon. The Edit-A-Thon helps us add missing information to the KBOO Archives Memory Bank. We need KBOO former volunteers, current volunteers, and listeners to identify content and programs of our historical archive. We'll be dealing with old audio, program guides, and more.
Was attracted by the story.
This event is open to the public. Again, that's the second KBOO Edit-A-Thon on Saturday, April 27th, from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. here at KBOO, 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland.
And there was a great deal of commotion regarding this event.
More information can be found at kboo.fm/editathon2019.
Lost in the words, you were misunderstood by everyone. Everyone, you were searching for words, but they came out absurd. And no one heard you, no one heard you speak your mind. They lost the time. Where's your heart? Where's your heart today? But no one sees.